committee, I'd like to welcome you all. I'd like to welcome our panelists. I'd like to swim. I'd like to welcome our moderator.
Standing here for you. How are you?
There you go. All right, do I need to say good morning again? Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this morning's episode of Emerson Hall, brought to you by the Adult Religious Education Committee of All Souls Unitarian Church. It's my job to introduce the moderator and get off the stage as quickly as possible. I'd like to remind you of the book table in the Alliance Room. I don't think we have any titles on the river, but I'm sure we have some titles that would be of interest. I'd like to remind you of the Adult Religion Education table at the back of the room, which has a lot of our programming and a lot of our forthcoming programming. And I'd like to remind you that next week our topic for Emerson Hall will be the Green Team and the Greening of the All Souls Sanctuary. Moderator this morning is Clayton Vaughn, commentator and anchorman for Channel 6 News and a member of the church. So, Clayton, please.
Good morning. Next Tuesday, Tulsa County will vote on the following proposition. Shall the County of Tulsa, Oklahoma, by its Board of County Commissioners, levy and collect a 0.4% sales tax for the purpose of Arkansas River Corridor development within Tulsa County, Oklahoma, and or to be applied or pledged toward the payment, principal, and interest on any indebtedness, including refunding indebtedness, occurred on behalf of Tulsa County for such purpose, such sales tax will commence on January 1, 2008, and continuing thereafter to December 31st, 2014. To talk about this issue, we have four gentlemen who have agreed to share some of their time with us. I guess we'll start here and go down that way. Right here is Michael Bates. Michael has been a Tulsa since 1969, went to Holland Hall and MIT, contributing writer for Urban Weekly, and maintains a blog at baseline.com. He was the Republican nominee for District 4 City Council in 2002 and currently is on the Tulsa Now Board of Directors. He is a software engineer in the flight simulation industry. Ken Neal, the white-haired gentleman sitting next to me, did not, after two requests, send in any biographical information. I've known Ken since we were both in the business of what used to be called cut reporters in journalism, and I for broadcasting, he for print. We went our separate ways, but stayed mostly in Tulsa and from the mid-50s, I guess, until the present time. Ken took 1 week of absence, I took two. He served as the editorial page editor for 13 years for the Tulsa World, and recently, in the past year or two, turned over that title to another person who has been at the World for a long time, but Ken remains on the payroll and in the community as the as the senior editor for the Tulsa World. Kevin Stubbs is with the Fish and Wildlife Service. He is a fish and wildlife biologist, has a B.S. degree from Iowa State University in Fish and Wildlife Biology, a master's degree in wildlife ecology fisheries from Oklahoma State University. He worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for 16 years and has been working with fish and wildlife issues along the Arkansas River since 1997. And sitting at the end, Mayor Vic Breland Jinx. He says he is a fourth generation Jinxite. That's his term. I've never heard that before. Served as an officer on the Jinx City Council since 1989, serving as mayor on two occasions. His present service as mayor began in 2002. He served in a variety of other offices in Jinx and other organizations. An instrumental role in leadership, leadership team of Vision in 2025. He's been on the insurance business on Main Street for the past 15 years. The format to which the candidates have agreed is to have opening statements of approximately 3 minutes. We're not going to use clips or anything, although we would appreciate your leaving as much time for questions and answers and discussions after the opening statement as you possibly could. The gentleman there in the black shirt will remind you of when you are about to run out of time. So we will begin now with Michael Bates. Mr. Bates?
Thank you. When a campaign has $1.3 million to spend to try to sell you something, perhaps some of you have the inclination to pick up that phone, dial that 800 number, and whip out your credit card. I tend to want to dig my heels in, poke holes in the hype, and dig down to what this is really all about. In the back of the room, there's a handout, which I'd hope would have been handed out, because it's hard to convey facts and figures, and that's what I've got on this handout, are some facts and figures for you to look over. What you've been told is that what we're voting on Tuesday is the same plan that's been in development for about 4 years with the Indian Nation Council of Governments and a lot of public input. And in fact, the Arkansas River Corridor Master Plan, that's its proper and official name, is not on the ballot on Tuesday. In fact, more than half of the money going for projects on Tuesday's ballot are going to projects that are not in the Arkansas River Corridor Master Plan. Some of you may remember about a year ago, we had a discussion about the channels, a project for modifying the Arkansas River. When that came forward, the county commissioners and NCOG actually put that through a review process, put together environmental committees. I think Michael Patton was on one of those committees, to examine the proposal to see if it was consistent and ought to be incorporated in the master plan. This proposal has not gone through that kind of scrutiny. And in fact, one of the aspects of this proposal, the most expensive aspect, is the Living River idea, which I learned the other night from listening to Gene Letcher of the Vote Yes campaign, actually involves excavating into bedrock to create a channel in the river between 31st and 71st Street. Nobody yet has looked at the environmental impact of that change or whether it fits in with the Arkansas River Corridor Master Plan, which has been adopted by our city officials as part of our comprehensive plan. There's been, I want to point out one thing that was in this morning's World on the front page, which is particularly inaccurate and particularly concerning. There's a claim out there that there's $52.4 million reserved for West Bank development. But if you look at the actual language of the ballot proposition, the promise that the county commissioners are making to us as voters, there's nothing in that resolution that reserves any money for West Bank development or for even City of Tulsa development. It could be used to help prepare ground for a Jinx Driller Stadium, a new South Tulsa Bridge. On that handout is the actual ballot resolution language, which you can read for yourself. I encourage you to check out the facts, read through that handout, and ask me questions about it as we proceed this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jim,
thank you. Thank you, Clayton. I feel a little bit like Woody Allen, who took a speed reading course and reported that he had read War and Peace in 4 hours. And somebody said, well, that's interesting, what's it about? And he said, well, it's all about Russia. This is about the river. And so it is difficult to talk about a fairly complicated thing in a few minutes. We're voting next Tuesday because George Kaiser looked at a plan that was developed by local government and by the U.S. Corps of Engineers to build a system of low water dams on the Arkansas River. And I demur with Mike because, or excuse me, because I think that the Arkansas River plan, overall plan that we voted for, or we put up money for, and the Corps of Engineers put money up for 4 years ago, at the time that we voted Vision 2025, coincidentally, does include those three or four dams. There were several places that they were put. It were later developed and into what we have today. So that was developed that way. The City Commission of Tulsa approved it. The County Commission approved it. The TMAPC approved it. And the City of Jinx, I think, approved it. And that's as far as I know. We want a small tax to build the dams. The dams and the river and the beautification will give Tulsa about 11 miles or 22 miles of improved shoreline and a considerably deeper, narrower river. There are places where it's already down to bedrock, by the way, and that maybe there will be some excavation. A part of the four-year planning to build the dams and beautify the river, planners have said there must be water in the river, and this system will ensure water in the river, per the Corps of Engineers and the Tennessee Valley Authority, which modeled the dams and the system. I'm getting a high sign. The Corps' motive is to repair the what has been claimed to be ecological damage as a result of the Arkansas River Dam at Keystone. That's their prime motivation in controlling the river flow downriver, and that will be a part of this. Mr. Stubbs and others will be part of the evaluation that will follow after this to obtain finally the Corps permit to build the dams. Their plan is they've already invested about $500,000 in the plan, so I suggest to you that it's probably unlikely that they will disapprove their plan, and I see that I'm out of time.
But we will have more time.
Yeah, you've got a mic.
First, I want to thank you for inviting me. It's refreshing to see a forum where you know you can ask questions and explore and get answers. And I'm here to do that. My agency is not necessarily here to take a position on the project as a whole, but we do have information on the project that I can provide. And in general, I would say that the project has a mixed impact, and there are some benefits, but overall, you know, there's probably more impacts to fish and wildlife than there are benefits, but we can't make a decision on whether to support the project or not until we see what the proposed mitigation is for those impacts. And as Ken pointed out, that is proposed to be, you know, assuming you vote yes, that there would be studies that would look at those impacts and determine what the mitigation should be. Referring to some of the comments here, there are some new things in this proposal that you're voting on that were not part of the master plan. The dams would be modified. The TBA report was done after that. And I have a copy of the TBA report here. And while it will provide some minimum flows, it is pretty minimal, and it may not be exactly what you've been told. So I can provide answers to those questions. Hopefully you'll ask that.
Thank you, Mr. Stubbs. Mayor Green.
Thank you, Clay. I want to thank you all for having us out today. Basically, you're here to ask questions, so we'll keep this as short as possible. I've lived my entire life on the river in Jinx and I'm very knowledgeable of the river. This plan, I'm on the board of directors of Gentile and have been for several years, and this is the Gentile plan. There have been. Yes, ma'am.
I can't hear.
You can't hear.
I think you need to hold the mic out of
that. Can you hear now? Well, that's the first time I've ever had anyone tell me they couldn't hear. Anyway, this actually is the ENCOG plan. I served on the board of directors of ENCOG and have for several years. And this is the Incog plan that went through 4 years of studying numerous public meetings, very similar to this. There have been some tweaking and stuff. When they're talking about bedrock in the river, I remind everyone that basically the Arkansas River from Zinc Dam to 71st Street is bedrock. The sand is basically gone. Other than me and Kevin Stubbs and Herb Beatty that I saw here a while ago, we might be the only ones in this room that's actually been on that river from one end to the other. So we're very knowledgeable of the river and just glad that you'd invite someone to Jesus to come up here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hill. First question is for Michael Bates, who is our first speaker. If we are not going to develop the river now, then when? And why not now?
There are more than one way to do the river, to make our river happen, without passing this tax on Tuesday. One of the proposals that I put forward is, first of all, we build the dams that were promised in Vision 2025. And on that sheet, you'll see the language from the ballot resolution from 4 years ago, where two new low-water dams were promised and modifications to Zinc Lake. Yes, they got the amounts wrong. And now they're telling us, well, we're going to have to raise your taxes to build what we already promised we were going to build for you. I believe that there's going to be sufficient money either from the federal government or as we go on with the permitting process, there will be money accumulated as our economy grows to pay for those dams when we are actually to the point where we could build them if we actually get the permits, which we might not. But right now, the city of Tulsa could use a tax increment finance district, just like Mayor Breland's using in Jenks, to assist river development on the West Bank, to acquire the property and to do any other necessary site preparation so that we could have commercial development on the West Bank. There's no reason to wait. What we've been given by the County Commission is a false dilemma. You either do it our way, which gives us control of 0.4% of sales tax and provides for lots of things that are not in the Arkansas River Corridor Master Plan. I would just challenge Mr. Neal and Mr. Breland, what page of the Arkansas River Corridor Master Plan do you find excavating between 31st and 71st into the bedrock on? What page do you find the 41st Street and 61st Street pedestrian bridges on? They're not in the document.
Excuse me, Mr. Bates, if we're going to ask questions, let's stop and get a couple of answers. And I think if I understand the questions correctly, they were directed to Mr. Neal and Mayor Breland. So, Ken, would you like to comment on what you just heard for just a moment?
Well, several questions in there. I don't know which one to answer first.
What page?
First of all, the General River Navigation Plan that was developed by the consultants, two or three different consultants, the Corps of Engineers, NCOG, and so on, was developed as a general plan for the river from Keystone Dam, 42 miles downstream. I saw it, and you need to look at it.
I've got it on my laptop, and I'd be happy to bring it out.
May I finish?
Okay.
There were several places on that where dams were proposed, potential dams were proposed, later to be determined where the dams were supposed to be. The general plan called for beautification of the river, development of the river. It did not get into the specifics that you're talking about, so there's nothing shown on a ballot title anyplace that specifically lists a dam somewhere. You can't do that right now. You have to determine the hydrological information, the geological information, the location of dam to do the specific design on those dams. So to say, well, where does it show on a specific place that we're going to do this or we're going to do that, is not possible at this time, Mike.
That's Mayor Breland has any response to that, since Mr. Bates, you mentioned Mayor Breland and Ken in your second response.
Well, I won't bring anything up along the dam, if Ken's correct, and as far as how all of that took place. What I will address is the 2025 issue that the money was in for the low water dam. What was in for the low water dam in 2025 was matching money. I personally we knew all along that it was told out of Washington, D.C., where the money would come from. that it was a match, a 30% match. Even if that, it may have been a little low, but that was quite a while ago. 4 years ago, we were going strictly on estimates of what it would cost. I personally made two trips to Washington, D.C., but one of them is between Jensen and Tulsa. And the money was going to be available. It was through the Corps of Engineers, which at the time Senator Inhofe was the chairman of that part of the Washington, D.C. bureaucracy. We made two trips up there. It had not been for Katrina and the Corps of money having to go towards fixing the hurricane damage. That money would have been available. So what he said there is not entirely true at all. And the issue as far as the low water dams and the master plan through Hancock Kent is correct. There was originally, I think, 7 or 9 low water dams that were shown on that plan that then had to go in and see where those were feasible, and they boiled down, they graded them as far as how and where they would be feasible.
And they did that in phase two.
Mr. Bates, could we continue on with another issue? And I'm sure we'll have another opportunity to review the one you raised. These are a couple of questions from Mr. Stubbs. For years, we've heard about the toxic waste and heavy metals from the old Sand Springs manufacturing plants that still reside in some of the silt. How will this be addressed? And will it eventually release and result in another dead zone? There's another question about another issue that you might want to speak to. The question is, why won't more water in the river be better for the fish? Sounds reasonable to me.
It does sound logical, doesn't it? They're two unrelated questions, so I'll address the first one. There are some Superfund sites up by Sand Springs, and there's other potential sources of pollution, you know, in the river, the refineries, you've got discharges, you've got stormwater runoff, and it is true that in general, you would rather discharge to a flowing river system. You maintain better water quality that way. And if you impound that water and you pool it up, especially under low flows, there is potential for that water quality be worse. And so the Corps and other agencies like the DEQ would have to look at those impacts, you know, before they build those dams. And the flows that you look at over history, there definitely is potential for water quality problems, especially at the lowest dam. When you get into a severe drought, you can have flows like last year that were day after day of only 35 cubic feet per second come down the river, and your discharges could be close to that. So you may not want to pool it up all the time, and that's something that would have to be addressed, you know, when they study that. And the only real feasible solution, unless you're going to dump a lot of fresh water in there to fix it, is that you would have to lower those gates on the dam and let it flow. The other question was more like more water in the river should be better for fish, but the problem is when you turn a river into a semi-lake, it totally changes the habitat. And we've studied the fish in the river looking at Zinc Lake is an example of what the impacts could be. And those studies show that there's very few fish in Zinc Lake, and they're mostly carp. It's not good habitat for the fish that would naturally occur in the river, and it's not a good enough lake habitat to be good for fish like bass or bluegills that you would stock in a lake. So it ends up being in between and being poor quality for fish. So all the miles that you impound would be poor fish habitat. But there is some potential benefits from the upstream of the Sand Springs dam. It would act like what we call a re-reg dam. It would store water that's released from hydropower generation and then release it later when they're not generating. So the river would not fluctuate as much. However, you know, the TVA report proposes a minimum release from that lake of 400 to 1,000 CFS. That's a pretty low flow. That's like a trickle in the Arkansas River. It will definitely not keep the river full bank to bank. That reservoir at Sand Springs just doesn't have enough storage, not enough capacity to do that. It would take at least 5,000 CFS to make the river look full. But there is water quality benefits. You know, if the flows were only going to be 200 CFS and they can release 1,000, well, that is a potential benefit. But they can only release that for about a day or two, because without Southwest Power generating again. And we do get frequent times when Southwest Power does not generate for 3 or more days.
Mr. Suggs, may I cut that issue off at the moment? I hope that we can get back to it. I would like to get to Mr. Neal for a couple of questions.
Can I just ask a question here?
Sure.
Mr. Suggs, these dams are designed to be lowered. So when you had an extremely low water situation and you didn't have much water in the river, if you lowered them, how would that be different than what we have now? And are the fish doing this great now? You see, what I'm getting at is that how would that be different in that circumstance?
I do understand your point, although I question, you know, unless it was, if you want to keep a lake there for recreational purposes.
Nobody's saying you're going to keep it up full all the time.
Well, it's true. If the gates were designed right to where they could
have... But you haven't seen that yet, have you?
I've seen the plans.
Oh, you have?
I'm on the advisory committee.
I knew you were. That's why I asked you.
But I've been involved in it from the start. There would be essentially no change to the river aside from... You would have at least a small sill there. You might have more sediment or sand tend to accumulate, you know, behind the dam. And the whole purpose...
Are you aware of the way they're designing them for sand removal?
Yeah, I'm just getting to that.
Okay, thank you.
They're designing all these gates to fall flat and be enough to where they'll help pass that sand under the high flow events. And under the real high flow events, they have to lower all those gates so that they not increase the flood potential. But in the lower flow times, those gates would be closed virtually all the time. And it is an impact to fish passage. When the gates are all down, the fish might be able to pass up. But most of the summer at lower flows, you're probably not going to want to have those gates down, or you're not going to have a pool.
Mr. Sparks, could we drop them at that point?
Okay, well, I'd say there would be a negative impact on fish, at least most of the time.
Thank you very much. I want to get back to Michael Bates and Ken Neal and ask you both the same question, but also insert another question that came in for each of you that I would like you to address out at the top. The basic question is, what are the motives for the people opposing and proposing this plan? Specifically, those motives that motivate the controversy that we have now seen within the community. To Mr. Bates, there is an additional question of, is there any tax increase you would be supportive of? And for Mr. Neal, the additional question, the supportive question,
sorry,
is, isn't the role of a newspaper to be objective? But again, the underlying question is about the motives of the people who are on either side of this issue. Mr. Davis,
well, I can only speak to my own motives. I believe there is a way to do good things on our river without this tax increase. I believe it's important that what we do is consistent with the planning process that we put in place. Again, I'd say to these gentlemen that you will find in the Phase 2 report of the NCOG plan that was formally adopted by our City Council and Planning Commission and County Commission a list of which dams were feasible and which dams weren't. That was settled as part of the Arkansas River Corridor Master Plan. But what you won't find is, you'll find a traffic bridge at 41st, not a pedestrian-only bridge that doesn't help link East and West Tulsa. You won't find a 61st Street pedestrian bridge, and you won't find excavating the bedrock of the Arkansas River between 31st and 71st in that plan. Now, as far as my motives, again, I say there are things we can do, and you'll see an outline on the sheet there of what we can do to improve our river without voting for a tax increase. And the tax increase issue is important because we have priorities in our city. We need to fix our streets. We need to bring down violent crime, and we need to do something about our parks. Neighborhood parks are actually more important to most of the people in this city than a centralized park area in the wealthiest section of our city. Pardon me for pointing that out, but it's the way it is. If you look at slide number 9 on that handout, you'll see we're going to collect $200 million almost from this tax in the city limits of Tulsa. But what the Chamber's figures show, and this is their most optimistic estimate, is we might get $40 million of that back to actually spend on the things that are most important, on streets, on public safety, on getting our neighborhood parks and pools back in shape and open to the public. So if we're going to raise taxes to fix up these basic public services, let's just spend the money directly on the basic public services instead of putting the money in some sort of complicated Rube Goldberg machine that might eventually spit out a little bit of money that we could spend on what really matters.
And I assume that if that were the case, that you might consider supporting that tax.
That's correct.
Mr. Neal, why don't we start with...
All of these criticisms could have been made of the Tulsa Port of Catoosa, of the Stabenow project, almost any big project through the years, you could pick it to death and find something that does not suit you in the planning stages. Of course, the pedestrian bridges are not specifically listed in that general master plan, but they are in harmony with that general master plan, and most people would agree to that. As far as the streets, yes, we need streets, of course, but it's not an either-or thing. First of all, we have quite a bit of money, and the mayor can tell you how much more money we have for streets, but we are not able, for various reasons of our own handicapping, to spend the money on those streets. We're spending something like, what, mayor, $50 million a year on streets right now, and we have about 4 or 5 years backlog of money available to spend on the streets, but we have assured taxpayers, in order to get the bond issues passed, remember, this will not raise your taxes. So the city has said, well, we can't sell all the bonds from the general obligation bond issue of 2005, some $60 million, that has not been sold because we would raise your taxes of that. You have to wait until the current bonds are retired before they sell new ones. That's a self-limitation we put on ourselves. We have some money for streets, and we're spending it, we, being the city of Tulsa, as fast as we can. I would submit that a lot of this river program will result in parkland and park uses, so it does address some park. And it is not a pie-in-the-sky thing. We know from direct experience that cities who develop the rivers get more money from sales tax, more money on the ad valorem tax rolls and every other thing that go to support things like streets, storm sewers, water, etc. So I would say it's an investment. It's not a tax.
Mr. Grigham, and the objectivity of the Tulsa Board?
Oh, excuse me.
Just a comment, just a brief comment on me? The role of the Tulsa Board in being objective.
Well, you could say, yeah, we have put an awfully lot of ink on this because we think it's that important. But I would submit to you that we have been also put quite a bit of ink on the people who are against it. We have, yes, we have. This morning's papers got it. I personally saw that that Dan Hicks had his say very early on in this thing. I did that. And I know that we have, so don't handshake me. This morning we've got a column inside the Tulsa, in the opinion section of the person who's against it. So it has not been. Pardon me?
After a lot of people.
Oh, we plotted that, did we? We plotted that, did we?
I just don't know how we're supposed to trust the paper on any issue. Did you forget this?
Well, don't. That's all I can say. If you don't, take the information that's in there and ask yourself if the information's accurate. Ask yourself if the man who went to Chattanooga and wrote a story about it did a fair analysis of Chattanooga, a fair reportage of that. If he didn't, then I'm with you. Yes, we put a lot of emphasis on it. We tried to be fair in many ways, bent over backwards on a lot of things. Our mail, for example, that I know something about, has been printed at about the rate that it has come in. That's what we've always done. Now, yes, we put emphasis on it. Yes, we think it's as important as probably Stavanoff. We think it's important as the Port of Cadusa. And yes, we have tried to get all the information out there that we could. Yes, ma'am.
For Mayor Freeman, who owns the river? I thought by treaty the river had banks along to the Native Americans. And who will pay when the river bank begins to erode in front of the businesses, the private businesses, built on the banks of the river? The taxpayers?
The land on the river that's owned by the Indians is from Muskogee down. It's where the river is now. Once you get above that, the land is actually owned by the landowner on each side, and they own the center of the riverbed. As far as the erosion on the river, on the bank itself, part of the plan is for the money from the sale of the land on the west bank to be put into a fund that will pay for maintenance on the dams and repair stuff along the river. Also remember that you've been reading the paper about Senator Inhofe and the $50 million that he has in the water bill. The money, that $50 million has to be spent for bank stabilization and stuff along the lines of that, up and down the river.
I have another question about details on the type of jobs expected if this passes. Anyone want to take a crack at that?
Well, I can show you the economic impact analysis that the Chamber of Commerce developed. I've got a spreadsheet that came from Bob Ball, who prepared that. And basically what they're saying is the money that is already in our community is somehow magically going to do more good if you don't spend it directly, but if we take it from you and give it to construction companies to spend. And then all these private developments that are going to happen, whether we pass this tax or not, the development in the River District in Jenks, he said he's going forward with it regardless. The development in Bixby is going to happen regardless. They count that anyway as if it were new money that's dependent on this tax passing. And of course, as I said earlier, development on the West Bank could be done with the Tax Increment Finance District governed by the City of Tulsa to make sure development happens in the City of Tulsa and generates sales tax for the City of Tulsa. There's no promise in that ballot resolution that any of that money is going to be spent on developing our West Bank. That's important to remember.
And about the job issue, or any other comments from the panel? All right. As an alternative to developing the river, what is about the possibility of developing canals in downtown or Brookside? After all, it's a canal and not a river, per se, that has happened in Oklahoma City and San Antonio and developed there. How does that strike you down in Jenks, Mr. Mayor Capri?
Well, we've never thought about building canals in Jenks. We didn't really have to since we had a river. Oklahoma City really didn't have a river. San Antonio didn't really have a river. So they had to make do with what they got. We've got a river that the one thing that links the whole county from one end to the other. And thus far, along the river, the main place that's developed the river has been Jenks. We read about it every day. I remind you all that since we're sitting at the 31st in Peoria, that most of you here are probably Tulsa citizens, But you probably all be able to see what's going on. For 20 years, I've been a huge, huge proponent of regionalism. And we have to work on this together. As people fly into Tulsa at night and they see the lights, they can't see the dividing line between Tulsa and Broken Arrow. It's not there. So as far as anyone knows, they're coming into Tulsa. And I'm a huge proponent of that. We need to fix the whole region. And if I was here strictly as the mayor of Jinx today, looking out strictly for Jinx's interests, I would probably be on the side of Michael Bates and tell you, do not vote for this, because I'm way ahead of you right now. And I've got a $1 billion investment that's fixing to happen whether this goes on or not. If you want to develop the river, this is your opportunity. If you sit back and continue to argue about what's going to happen on the river, I can promise you we're not arguing again. While you all are arguing and having meetings, we're going to be getting footage. So this is the one opportunity to get involved in. We have this opportunity. We may not come along again on the ground. Long, long time.
Thank you,
Reverend. I think that's an excellent question that was asked by the audience, because when you look at successful waterside development in other cities, most often you find there are historic buildings or old buildings next to it. You have Bricktown, which is through an old, the Bricktown Canal goes through an old warehouse district. The San Antonio River was at one time considered, back I think in the 20s or 30s, to be turned into a storm sewer, much as we've turned many of our midtown creeks into storm sewers. And instead, they left it open. They have these bordering buildings, and you'll find a lot of preserved historic buildings in downtown San Antonio. The kind, sadly, because of urban renewal plans that Mr. Neal and others have supported, we've knocked down. There is a proposal on the table for the 6th Street area, the Pearl District, it's now known as. Elm Creek flows underground there, surfaces briefly in Central Park, and then goes back into a 7-foot-high tunnel that leads to the 21st Street Bridge at the Arkansas River. And there's a proposal as part of an overall stormwater mitigation plan to remove some areas from the floodplain, to open that back up as a canal, as a channel, down either 6th or 7th Street, next to some old commercial buildings that could be redeveloped and could bring an area back that would tie TU to downtown, would reopen some inner city area for redevelopment, and would cost, I think the estimate was around $20 million to do. And would actually get us closer to the kind of attraction that Oklahoma City has and that San Antonio has.
I'd like to have Ken Neal's comments on that, since I think your name was mentioned earlier.
What was the question that you want me to...
Why this land at this time? I think Mr. Bates brought up several other ideas that are presumably not...
Well, several of the...
It's about canals, actually, was the question.
Yes, about the canals, actually, is where that's from.
Well, the canals, I, frankly, enough has been said about that. I think probably agree with Michael on something. I'd like to address for a minute the thing that just sort of stuns me is the question was raised earlier, I think, about what are the motivations of the people who want to put private money into this plan, i.e. George Kaiser. I think I can add up, and the mayor might agree, we won't do the math right here, but I think George Kaiser has pledged, counting the money on the river, has probably pledged or put in, promised already, probably around $130 million to this community. Now, it's not like George Kaiser is investing that money in the hopes of getting rich. People will say, well, he's going to get something out of that. Well, George Kaiser has already got something out of this community to the tune that he is worth, according to Forbes magazine, about $4.4 billion. So he's not putting that money into this community because he's planning to get rich. He has invested heavily in early childhood education and health things along the river. He looked at this, as I said earlier on, and said, well, you guys are saying that is NCOG, Corps of Engineers, the people of Tulsa, to my certain knowledge, for 50 years have said they want to put the dams on the river. He's saying, if you're serious about that, let's do it this fall, and I'll put $100 million in it. That's the way this started. And we had a plan already in place, started through the process, as somebody said, through phase three, and we were ready to go on that. That's the way this came about. How do you finance it? I said, early on, use the six-tenths money that we've already voted, extend it for a few years, and borrow against that income stream. People at this table, the mayor and everybody who knows that, that turned out to be not possible because of the requirements by the current bonds on that six-tenths for Vision 2025. That income stream is pledged to the underwriters of those bonds. So you couldn't do what I wanted to do.
Ken, let me ask you a related question.
So therefore, we went to the four-tenths.
Which is what will happen to the money collected in this new sales tax addition if the permits, the necessary permits, are not made available?
What would happen to it?
Yes, sir.
Well, I presume that the authority that is being formed as a part of the ballot title, as I understand it, to do this, would you take that money and then you could either spend it on other things, or I guess you could just give it back, or could you spend it on other things? Mayor's shaking her head. I bet you talk about that. I'm ignorant on that, truth.
No, it can't be spent on other things. If the vote passes and the money is there, and then some of the issues do not come about. You can't get the permits for the low water dams, or you can't purchase the land on the west bank, or whatever. If that can't come, then that money will never be spent, and then the bond will be set aside soon. It will close that soon.
Mayor, I'm
getting pointers here from the front row.
Okay. Mayor Bollinger, we would love to have your comments on that. For those of you in the back, Kathy Taylor has come in, and if you do have something that you would like to share with us, I'd be happy to give you a microphone. And you have about 3 minutes.
I've heard that question a lot, what happens to the money if or permitting doesn't occur. The ballot title, I believe, is very, very strictly written. But in addition, one of the things that we've done over the last 18 months, that's been the day of my involvement, and Mayor Brindleton speaks to before that, is that the Corps of Engineers have been with us every single step of the way. One, two representatives of the Corps have been at every meeting that we've had analyzing and helping to give input on the design and structure of the low water dam. So the Corps permitting is a process, absolutely. I think we're well into the background information we need for that process, but I'm confident we will receive the Corps permitting. Would you agree?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Mayor Taylor. And Mr. Bates, although I know I see you have something else to say, the clock says we have a minute to go. And when those doors open back there, it's all over.
All right.
So I'd like to take this opportunity to thank not only the mayor, but the audience out of the question, which we were a little short on.
Thank you, Mayor.
Also to Ken Neal and to Michael Bates and Mayor Breland from James and to Kevin Stubbs. Could we please give them a round? The question of the morning that was submitted that I did not get an opportunity to answer was, where would all the cars park? So I'll just leave that for you to ponder. The polls will be open from 7 in the morning until 7 in the evening on Tuesday. Thank you very much.